En ese proceso nos dimos cuenta that being around other people who were undocumented and knowing that they were undocumented, like Jorge, like what you were saying, it was like really empowering for us. And so un día estábamos en un cuarto, and I remember, you know, one of my friends, David Ramirez, who's also a Chicago organizer, said, you know, if gay people come out of the closet, what do undocumented people come out of, right? Like, we come out of somewhere. And someone else was like, well, the shadows, like people always say, you know, they're in the shadows. And so that's how it ended up becoming a coming out of the shadows.
Welcome to El Calentón, a Latinx podcast about current issues, news, culture, music, food, and political hot takes that we call El Calentón. So if you're not a member yet, subscribe today at mijente.net/join. And hello to my co-host. Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Hey, que la que hay.
We're back. Another week, another dollar, another missing member of the monarchy.
OMG.
I am not enterada completamente. Is she dead? Or what's the news about?
Que fuerte, nos van a demandar for what you just said.
Yes, yes.
The thing that I know is that people are saying que está muerta, and that's why they keep photoshopping Kate Middleton.
Yeah, wow. I've heard about some photoshopping controversy. That's all I've heard about it, to be honest.
Yeah. It could never happen to our generation. Nosotras con el Photoshop éramos otra
right.
cosa.
Yeah, they can't fool us.
So stay truchas in these streets. But thank you yes. for having us back, Jorge. I'm Cynthia. I'm a national organizer with Mi Gente, and I'm here in Chicago.
Hello. I'm Ali, content creator, creativa. And I was thinking that I'm like, I keep unlocking these backgrounds. Creo que en todos los episodios he tenido un background distinto. Pero ya, yeah, hopefully this is my final forum. Así que happy to be back desde este espacio and ready to keep talking about inmigración.
Super happy to share this space with you all. Yes, and like Ali said, we're going to continue to dig deeper around immigration. So before we get into it, we just wanted to share some, you know, top headlines around immigration. And we wanted to start with actually that March 10th marked the 18th anniversary. You know, those big immigrant rights protests that happened in Chicago and all over the country. And specifically in Chicago, there was over 100,000 people protesting in downtown, you know, gritando, chanting, you know, si se puede, yes, you can. And it was one of the largest demonstrations for the immigrant rights movement in the United States. Obviously, we know that this is 2024. It's going to be an election year. Immigration is going to be a hot issue. So let's, como dice Cynthia, let's say trucha to see how the both parties and those people running for office are going to be talking about immigration. We know that this summer, the Supreme Court is suspected to, you know, decide on the future of DACA. And recently, right, we've been hearing a lot of buzz and a lot of conversation and debates around this so-called border bill that is only, right, as far as we know, it's a bill that is super harmful to our people and to our communities and to the border. And last week, Biden caused controversy, right, because he used the term illegal in his State of the Union speech. And so we know that our communities were like, hell no, we've been trying and have moved on from this term. So chanclazo para el Biden.
Fast.
Yes.
He's struggling. He's trying to play for everybody. Está como tambaleándose ahí.
¿Verdad? ¿Qué le pasa? Qué feo caso. But given this concept today on El Calentón, like we said, we're going to dig deeper into past immigration movements and how organizing has put pressure on past presidents. And so from the activism during the Bush administration in 2006 through the Obama years, through the Trump era in 2016, and pues, ¿dónde estamos ahorita, no? And so that's why we're welcoming our very own Tania Unzueta, Mi Gente's political director, and an immigrant rights leader that has been doing it for many years. So, applause para Tania. Welcome,
Dímelo, Tania.
Where are you at, Tania?
Hola, hola. Well, I'm in my 40s. No.
One time. That's another topic for another day.
I'm in Chicago. I'm excited to be here. And thank you for having me.
Bienvenida, Tania.
Sí, sí, claro. Thanks for joining us. A ver, vamos a empezar with some basics, Tania. Why is it important to analyze the history of our movements?
I'm sorry to give like the usual answer, but I feel like it's to learn from what we've like had in the past. I think that over time, since I've been involved in immigrant rights organizing, I feel like you start seeing patterns. You start seeing patterns. You start seeing people make similar decisions. You start seeing how like different political like movements make plays. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure out how to disrupt them too, because si no nos quedamos como en el mismo espiral the whole time. So to me, you know, I started doing a lot of immigrant rights organizing, or the height of a lot of my organizing started in 2010. And, you know, we were at a time where we were living under President Obama. It was a big question about like, how do we engage a president that's supposed to be on our side? And in some ways we're seeing some of those questions now, right? With facing the potential of Trump, and yet seeing Biden fail on immigration over and over. So yeah, I think it's important to remember, to acknowledge the work that people have done in the past, and just to learn and figure out what we do in the future.
It's going to be a rocky year given the elections, right? Yeah, I mean, what's like around, you know, for me when I started, again, I'm not trying to age myself, or maybe I am. When I think that I really felt called to the immigrant rights movement is when I started to see queer and trans folks come out of the shadows and say, this is who I am, fully who I am. Either you take it or you leave it. And that's when I felt like this, I found my people, here's my home. And I felt like that commitment, like really just came out of my body and said, I'm committed to my people and to this movement. What can you share about this concept, this organized and strategic tactic of coming out of the shadows?
Yeah. So for several years, and some people still do it now, March was known as the National Coming Out of the Shadows Month across the country. And what that meant was that people in schools and community organizations, we would encourage, in their families, would like use it as a time to talk about their stories of what it meant for them to be undocumented. And it was this idea that was coming from the gay liberation movement, really, right? That talked about how you had to make people who knew you and loved you realize that your life experience was different from them, particularly if they weren't gay, or in our case, if they weren't undocumented, and that that had a political connection to the state of the world and to the work that we did. And so for us, it was a time to be able to say, you know, I feel like it was something that a lot of us who had grown up in the United States, who, you know, hablábamos inglés y fuimos a la universidad and all of that, like, and people didn't have that idea of a person who was undocumented, right? And so I think for a lot of us, it was a time to talk about our status, to put that contrast around the idea of who undocumented people were in people's minds and in politics, y decir como que somos nosotros, aquí estamos, and we need things to change. So, you know, we started doing that in 2010. And I don't know if, like, I've told the story before, but, you know, in 2009, there was a lot of, like, organizing around undocumented students who were put in deportation proceedings. One of my friends, Rigo Padilla, who's a Chicago organizer, was a Chicago organizer, an educator, was in deportation proceedings. And so a lot of us who were undocumented started organizing around his case. And part of the interesting thing was that he had gotten put into deportation proceeding because of a DUI. And that meant that there were a lot of people who didn't feel like he deserved to be helped, right? He made a mistake, he should be deported. Y sentíamos como que it was the people who were undocumented who were around him, who were able to think a little bit outside of that, and who, you know, like nosotros mismos pensábamos, like, that could have happened to me, right? That could have happened to me, like doing something else, or like, you know, drinking underage, or fumando marijuana, like whatever it was, that could have been me. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, we have to organize around it. Y en ese proceso nos dimos cuenta that being around other people who were undocumented and knowing that they were undocumented, like Jorge, like what you were saying, it was like really empowering for us. And so un día estábamos en un cuarto, and I remember, you know, one of my friends, David Ramirez, who's also a Chicago organizer, said, you know, if gay people come out of the closet, what do undocumented people come out of, right? Like, we come out of somewhere. And someone else was like, well, the shadows, like people always say, you know, they're in the shadows. And so that's how it ended up becoming a coming out of the shadows.
Wow. Yeah. Or like, I remember people also, yeah, I remember like Chicago was like, I remember seeing images, you know, and I don't know if it was by the Bean or somewhere in downtown, like y'all were in some steps.
Federal Plaza.
Like, yeah. I remember Ray Wences, you know, sharing their story. And just like for me, being from Santa Ana, Orange County, you know, like an hour south of LA, where like we started doing some of that too. And like, it just felt super, super empowering. Like people kept me saying like, I'm coming out of two closets too, you know? So it was so just like so interesting and such a, yeah, like such a special, like an important moment in the movement.
And I'll say like what the reason why we did it on March 10th, 2010 was because, as you mentioned in the introduction, in 2006 in Chicago, on March 10th, there had been the first huge protest. Like there were headlines the next day that decían like, el monstruo dormido se levantó, right? Like,
yes.
All of that stuff, it was the first time that there had been in a long time, like a mass movement around immigrant rights. Y eso fue en el 2006. And just for context, it was during the Bush administration. Había una ley que querían poner, HR 4437, I think it was called, that I remember one of the big things was that like anyone who helped undocumented people was going to be prosecuted. So las iglesias, si le daban comida a la gente sin papeles, could have been prosecuted. Si tú le dabas un ride a tu amigo who was undocumented, you were like transporting undocumented immigrants.
Wow.
Entonces era like a lot of criminalization of both immigrants and everyone else who could have helped them. Y fue la primera vez that everyone just was like, nope, like this doesn't make sense. Vamos a la calle. And yeah, but eso, it happened on March 10, 2006. By 2010, ya no habían las marchas en marzo. Most of the marches had started to happen in May. And so cuando dijimos like, why don't we just do a big thing at Federal Plaza? We were both trying to like honor that legacy of Chicago and use a day que la gente ya estaba acostumbrada, right, to turn up. So por eso fue en marzo that we did Coming Out of the Shadows.
Tengo una pregunta que me surge, Tania, when you were talking about la prensa the next day de las protestas, ¿verdad? Thinking about how much I'm in comms y pienso siempre cómo hemos cambiado la manera en la que los medios talk about our movement and how we talk about our movement y qué espacios we use to get people to know what we're doing, show up, etc. If you could say a little bit of, en ese momento, how was that for you all? Like, no solamente getting people to know what you were doing, esas acciones, pero cómo la prensa lo recibía, ¿eran honestos y justos con su reporting or was it like unfair?
It was mixed. I think eventually we won the narrative, porque siento que sí, eventualmente the story that the press was telling was undocumented students have rights y como que this is why they're protesting. But at the beginning, it was rough, particularly the question about using the word illegal. Yeah. Like in el 2010, I feel like now it's actually really interesting to see how angry people were and how it became this national thing that Biden said that word, the I word. Because in 2010, it was barely a debate. Like, esa era la manera que usaban los medios. Like, every media used that word. And I don't think the Associated Press stopped using the word illegal until way after 2010. Like, there was a point when they said no. Entonces, I remember one of the first headlines when we were fighting Rigo's case was, illegal students take up cause.
Wow.
That was, I think, in the Chicago Tribune. It was like one big newspaper. Y esa era la cosa. Like, and the thing is, that wasn't even the fight. Like, ni siquiera, o sea, sí nos molestaba, but we weren't even angry about that. It was like el punto era como contar las historias. So it was mixed. I do think, like, para mí, so on March 9th, 2010, we were making these banners. Estábamos pintando in this radio building that I used to work at. Y like, estábamos pintando this big banner that we eventually carried que decía undocumented, unafraid, no, sin papeles, sin miedo. And there was a reporter who came to me and was asking me to tell my story. Y en ese momento, because I was working, right? Like, tenía un trabajo. And obviously, like, you can't work if you're undocumented. Yo no quería decir mi nombre. Like, I was going to come out. They were going to take my picture. Pero nada más iba a ser Tania without a last name. And esa reportera was really insistent. Like, me insistía. Y yo le dije que no. And then there was another reporter que igual me empezó a insistir y me decía, pero ¿por qué no nos dices tu full name? Si vas a estar tu cara ahí, va a estar todo. And I feel like it was a hard moment porque por un lado, like, I didn't want to, like, I sentí presión, right, from this, from the media to expose myself and my story in a way that I hadn't planned to. And I think that there were a lot of people who had that experience también donde, like, les hacían más preguntas de lo que queríamos compartir. And I did eventually end up giving her my last name. And I was lucky enough that, like, the radio station that I was working with, like, políticamente was like, we support you. Like, if someone comes after you, like, we'll figure it out, but we're cool. Pero hubieron algunas gentes that after coming out of the shadows perdieron sus trabajos, por ejemplo, because their full names got published. Y pues sí, los lugares de trabajo were scared themselves que iban a venir tras ellos, ¿no? Or tras, like, other empleados in their thing. So I think it was a mix. Like, les digo que I do think eventually we did change the narrative, pero sí fue al principio como que una mezcla de lo que diría que es como amarillismo, right? Like, let's, like, get at the, like, saddest part of your story, como que cuéntame todo lo que has sufrido y todo eso, to eventually trying to, like, own como que la historia que nosotros contábamos and how to say it.
Yeah, because I remember there was actually, like, so, like, campaigns targeting the media for them to start using the word illegal. Like, it was, like, you know, like, newspapers and traditional media y todo eso. No, and I totally remember telling my story to, like, a Southern California LGBT magazine. And at that time, I was working as a youth coordinator for the LGBT Center in OC. And then one of the board members read my story and got me fired.
Oh,
And it was just, like, the most frustrating and saddest thing. And again, right, like, I was working at a nonprofit, and I just remember, but, like, it happened to so many people. And, like, people, like, also their families were targeted because, you know, the more information they shared became more public. And so that was also part of the fear, right, as folks were, like, in conversations or, like, talking to media.
Y nomás un pequeño anécdota, Tania, I don't know if you were there in 2012 at the Coming Out of the Shadows, but that's when high school Cynthia cross paths with you probably for the first time, unless it was, like, you know, getting a raspado on 26th Street. But I was a senior in high school in 2012, and my Latino literature class as a class walked out of school and marched over to Federal Plaza to Coming Out of the Shadows, if I'm right, Federal Plaza. But I just remember, yeah, going with my crew, and, like, honestly, like, that was way more politicizing than, I'm like, on a scale of, on top three most politicizing moments in my life, I think Coming Out of the Shadows is up there with, like, listening to Oye Mi Canto for the first time, and also, like, learning about A Day Without a Mexican in 2006. So just wanted to shout that out, and I think, you know, would want to kind of hear from you too, like, yeah, that was so impactful for young people, so would love to kind of hear from you, like, what did it mean to have young people at the front of this? And then, ¿qué se logró? You know, what really do you think were some things that came out of all of this?
I think, you know, before I answer your question, it sort of reminds me of, I remember when in 2006, cuando fueron las grandes marchas esas, I was in college, and I remember being a little obsessed with this question of, like, what the impact of marches were, because it was a little bit of a fight right there and there, because the election was coming, right? So it was a little bit of a fight about, like, ¿qué es lo que sirve? Like, do you mobilize to get people out to vote and door knock y como que todo eso, or do you march? And somehow, like, I feel like eventually they tried to put everything together y salió, you know, hoy marchamos, mañana votamos was, like, what they landed as, like, I feel like a little compromise of, like, yeah. But I feel like I felt very strongly that, like, it was important to be able to track, like, the impact of marches, nada más por ser marchas. And I feel like the story that you told, Cynthia, is like actually like what I feel like I've heard a lot over and over, like both from the 2006 marches and the 2010 ones. Que como que some of the impact is the politicization of people, is the like hearing people's stories for the first time. And so hay como que un nivel de cultural shift, right? And cultural change that happens where like, como que si el standard of how you treat immigrants is here, like we were able to like raise it a little bit by telling our stories y como poniéndole una cara humana. And it was literally the point. I think a couple more things to say, like, you know, we eventually ended up thinking about civil disobedience and getting arrested also as part of the coming out continuum. It was sort of like, you know, at some point, Dream Activist, which was one of the organizations that we worked with a lot, put together like a coming out guide. Y había como una pirámide, ¿no? Y entonces la pirámide at the top was like coming out to your best friend, y como que, coming out to your class, coming out to whatever, coming out at a rally, coming out of the shadows rally, doing a civil disobedience. Entonces habían como que niveles de como que, ¿qué tanto, qué tan afuera you were going to put your identity? Y era porque para nosotros era un momento estratégico, right? Where, again, that was a point where we were under the Obama administration. It felt like there had been a lot of conversations about what would happen next. The DREAM Act, the STRIVE Act, there were all these like policies in government that we felt like the Democrats had not backed enough. And so it was a point for us to say, like, to put pressure, no, como decir, like we're putting our stories, we're putting our voices, we're putting our bodies on the line. And under the current administration, as an undocumented person, if I'm arrested, that could mean that I could be deported, right? That's gonna impact, like, so to me, the point of a good civil disobedience is to put the person in a position where they have to make a choice. No, o me apoyas o me deportas was sort of the thing. And it didn't work out exactly like that because, you know, three cities y como que otras cosas. But that was sort of the point. Y la verdad, siento que part of the impact was that it started out with undocumented young people, and undocumented stuff gets more complicated as like, si vienes aquí más grande, like it's a different experience. But at some point we also had our parents, like mis papás también ended up participating in coming out of the shadows. And it was a very different experience for them porque no hablaban inglés de la misma manera. Sometimes they have been suspected of being undocumented. So no es así como que sorpresa in the same way that like for some of us is. So anyway, so I feel like it really changed a lot of lives. I think it had an impact on the way that we were talking about immigration. And I think it had an impact on our movement because honestly, up to then, most of the people that I had seen at the head of organizations and at the head of our movement was people who hadn't had the experience of being undocumented. Y siento que that did change in terms of what we see today.
I mean, we had a lot of like white folks leading like immigrant rights organizations or campaigns, you know, from what I remember. You know?
And we were just like the example. Eso me acuerdo que me caía tan gordo. Like when, ay, es que era como que, you know, rally, like person who has no experience, speaks. And then here's the example of a pobrecita familia indocumentada. Y ya, ¿no? Y era como que ya ni le ayudaban si estaba en deportación. It was like, you know, thank you for telling your story. And I feel like part of what we were trying to say is like, we can't be those people. Like, no queremos ser nada más sus ilustraciones to your organizing. Like, we actually want to be part of the organizing.
Right.
Y dentro, es que eso me hizo pensar también, ¿verdad? Even in feminist movement, dentro de todas las luchas that que hemos dado históricamente, hay como unas facciones that are a little bit more with the state o más como mainstream o más que se convencen fácilmente or they are not as radical. En ese momento había, además de ustedes, otras facciones that were doing the fight, pero de esta manera un poco más blanca, un poco más complaciente o estaban más o menos unidos bajo un mismo llamado.
No, era como de todos lados. I mean, even if we talked about just the undocumented youth, para dar algunos ejemplos, habíamos los que para mí eran como los más centrados, right? Like my little crew, que era así como que we're doing the coming out of the shadows, we're fighting deportations. Jorge también ahí estaba. We're like queer and undocumented and unafraid. Y como que, you know, pushing for the Dream Act when it made sense. Para mí eran como que esa gente. Pero habían también los compañeros that like, you know, maybe believed more in the American dream than I did and very much felt like, you know, the telling the story piece was also about talking about how American they were, how much they wanted to join the army, for example.
Wow.
Había todo un grupo en Arizona, I think, that called themselves the Dream Army, y como que hacían sus ROTC, like ejercicios con sus banderas, wow. Like super American. Y la verdad para nosotros en ese momento, I tried not to judge. Like no era mi política, but I understood como que la desesperación of wanting to be part and not like an outsider. So para mí era como que, you know what, you're doing your strategy, no me voy a poner ahí a marchar contigo, but I sort of get it.
Yeah.
También habían como que los del otro lado que sentían que even by telling our stories that what we were doing was like being the privileged ones. And I think that there's a level of truth to that, ¿no?
Yeah.
Como, como lo que decía, éramos los que hablábamos inglés, los que fuimos a la universidad, los que no parecíamos inmigrantes indocumentados, and part of the point of our strategy was to make that contrast, right? Incluso durante las desobediencias civiles, I want to say that it was my idea, pero por ahí alguien que me corrija históricamente, but like to use the caps and gowns, like we wanted, cuando nos arrestaban, queríamos usar los caps and gowns
because the point
was for people to see people in graduation, you know, con esposas y siendo arrestados. Like, that was something we wanted people to see because it was how we felt.
Una imagen impactante.
Claro. Yeah. Y si lo analizas, hay un montón de privilegio en decir que teníamos acceso a la universidad, que éramos estudiantes, que todo eso. Entonces, habían algunas personas que decían que estábamos como que, pues sí, usando nuestro privilegio para alzar solamente nuestro movimiento. Entonces, sí, la verdad, había como que de todos lados.
Vamos. ¿Por qué año vamos? Que esto es como un recuento histórico, una montaña rusa. Estamos en una...
Creo que apenas vamos en el como 2013. Like, nos hemos movido del movimiento de los jóvenes. Because, I mean, there's a lot there. Creo que lo otro que es interesante, maybe, es like... Jorge, ¿tú te acuerdas cuando se hicieron las desobediencias en las oficinas de Obama during the re-election period?
Sí, sí me acuerdo.
That was one of the times that I felt like, como que we took a risk, porque también, you know, this was a time when Obama was finishing his first term, y pues the expectation was that everyone was going to rally around Obama, ¿no? Porque necesitaba ganar. And for us, I remember having like conversations with the movement that was with our immigrant rights movement. Y la pregunta más grande era como que, ¿qué es lo peor que puede pasar? And at that point, we did not think that Obama was at risk for losing the re-election. I'm sure there's tons of analysis de un lado o del otro ahí. But we sort of felt like, okay, cool. Si como que va bien la cosa, then the best role that we can play is push him on the immigration question. Entonces empezamos con empujar, literally like doing civil disobediences with our caps and gowns en las oficinas de reelección de Obama. And that was around the time when some of the policies changed around deportation. And, you know, like es de esas cosas that like, there's tons of things moving at the same time. Hay gente que está escribiendo y trabajando desde el estado, ¿no? Como que haciendo su cosa. And I feel like the stuff that we did desde afuera really opened up space for people to be able to change some of those things. And so, yeah, to me, that's just like a lesson over and over that like, it doesn't matter. Honestly, it almost feels like it doesn't matter if the politician is in your support or not. Tienes que crear espacio to be able to like make policies move.
Y pensando en esos últimos años ya de Obama luego de ser reelecto, how do we go from there al, verdad, al 2016? ¿Qué pasan en esos últimos años donde está Obama? ¿Qué cosas se quedan en el tintero? What things never came to fruition? ¿O cuáles fueron esas últimas decepciones? And how did that kind of like make or didn't make the landscape para Trump? Realmente yo acá en Puerto Rico remember when Trump started sonando,
he used el tema de inmigración como balón político de una manera muy desagradable, muy deshumanizante. And I remember that was one of the first times que yo estaba escuchando a esta persona as a politician. Y las personas that are listening to us, I'm doing the biggest comas. Yeah, like, how do you go from those last years como Trump entra al discurso y utiliza precisamente el tema de inmigración?
Yeah, I mean, siento que los últimos años bajo Obama were hard because I think it was in 2013 that we were pushing for the DREAM Act to pass. Y era como que, you know, our top goal around the DREAM Act. Y no pasó, like, varias veces. And I think a lot of us became really tired of, like, trying to advocate around the president. Like, a lot of us were starting to form our own local organizations y también como que seeing opportunities en nuestros propios estados y en nuestras propias ciudades to, like, move things. So I think a lot of us started working, for example, to pass the Illinois DREAM Act and the California DREAM Act and the New York DREAM Act, which were more about tuition and access mm-hmm. to information than they were about legalization, pero sentíamos que pues ayudaba. We started fighting deportations a lot more, so it became less about, like, let's get the DREAM Act, and it was more about all of the deportations that were happening. If you remember, Obama ended up being, like, the president who deported the most people.
Deporter-in-chief.
Hasta más de Trump. Right? So, like, ahí sigue con el título. So we started fighting a lot of that. De ahí salió mm-hmm. mucho el movimiento, the Not One More movement. And so anyway, I feel like what a lot of us who were in the undocumented youth movement started como moviéndonos a diferentes lugares. Some started doing the deportation stuff. A lot of us, including Jorge and I, started doing a lot of the Not One More work, started working in nuestros propios estados, como estaba diciendo. And some folks started getting into politics. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, that was the first year that, like, Eric Candiola from Arizona, for example, ended up working for some of the political campaigns. I want to say Bernie yeah. Sanders at one mm-hmm. point. Como que empezamos a hacer diferentes cosas. And I mean, I think, like, at the same time, like, I'll say I don't think I expected for Trump to win in the same way. I mean, in the way that he did. Mm-hmm. I remember as Mi Gente, we had just started the organization that summer, the summer before the election. We got really, really involved in the election in Arizona against Joe Arpaio. And cuando nos dimos cuenta, right, like the next day, like, Trump had won the election. Yeah, and I think that was, as folks remember, a very hard time for immigrant rights organizers.
Do you think that shock, verdad, cuando gana Trump, todo el mundo tuvo su nivel de shock dependiendo dónde estaba, desarticuló más el movimiento o lo organizó más, movilizó más personas?
Un poco de ambos. I kind of feel mm-hmm. like at the beginning hubo energía. In some ways, similar a lo que estaba diciendo, that when we were disappointed by the federal government, nos fuimos a la cosa local. I think we did a similar thing cuando ganó Trump. Para Mi Gente, por ejemplo, is when we started the Expand Sanctuary campaign mm-hmm. that, like, you know, other organizations ended up joining and growing. Y esa era la idea de que if we're not going to get protected by the federal government, tenemos que protegernos a nivel de ciudad, a nivel de estado. So we're going to strengthen our sanctuary. We're going to, like, do our work in the sanctuary cities. Ahí es donde empezamos la lucha here in Chicago to, like, pass some of the welcoming city ordinance work, que ahora está regresando al tema. Pero, so that happened. Y mucha gente también, I think a lot of people tried to mobilize, como que me acuerdo that there were a lot of, like, networks of people who wanted to do raid response, ¿no? Como que la idea era que si había una redada en tu vecindario, you were gonna jump up, protect your neighbor. There were a couple of places donde tuvieron que hacer ruedas alrededor de, like, border patrol para que no se llevaran a la gente. So people, I feel like, responded very much like that. And I think we got really tired. No, like, mm-hmm. después de 4 años de luchar y luchar y luchar, perder muchas veces, like, have very few wins, y como que lo que ganábamos, they would, like, push back. And so, I mean, no digo que nos, like, nunca nos rendimos, but I do think the immigrant rights movement by the end of the Trump administration, estábamos muy, muy cansados.
Estamos cansados, queremos descansar. Y Tania, ¿verdad? Muchas cosas ganadas, muchas perdidas. But moving forward al ¿verdad? Trump gana, después gana Biden, pero sabemos que seguimos en una lucha y creo que I think it's very important what you mentioned about no matter the politician, nosotras tenemos que seguir organizing y preparar el terreno y ocupar los espacios y exigir las cosas que necesitamos para nuestra gente. Y para terminar un poco en un temperature check, how do we feel about esos challenges and obstacles that lie ahead? We know we have an election coming up. Sabemos que hay muchas conversaciones complejas. Aquí usamos el tema de la temperatura, si te sientes ready y caliente para meterle con intensidad o si hay un poco de espacio de tibio, complejidad.
Y yo tengo que responder.
I can start because I hice la pregunta. I feel like when I empecé a ver que iba a ser Trump and Biden again, it felt a little deja vu, bien frustrante, distópico. And I was feeling very cold towards the topic, como que bien desmovilizada. But lately, I've been feeling like intensa, caliente, molesta, con rabia. No de la que me desilusiona, sino de la que moviliza. Because I feel like no podemos pensar, ¿verdad?, que ahí comienzan y terminan nuestras luchas. Las elecciones son como un día, un momento, y es importante, ¿verdad? Pero nuestra gente, nuestras organizaciones y el trabajo que hacemos es so much bigger than that. So, mi contestación al temperature check es que estoy puesta para el problema, estoy ready. Este año va a ser bien intenso, pero me siento lista y acompañada. Y creo que me llevo de esta conversación, Tania, that son patrones. Sometimes we feel bien desilusionado because pensamos que las cosas están pasando por primera vez and we're so unique. Pero there's so much knowledge in seeing these patterns and talking about what we did in the past y cómo se parece ahora and that we survived y que las cosas sí han cambiado and han shifted bastante. So, tengo esperanza fogosa.
Sí, sí. Pues yo estoy contigo, Ali. Yo también estoy ready. Va a estar complicado, pero like, we shouldn't let these two options reduce, you know, our organizing, our power, our dreams for the future for our people. Yeah, and there, we have no choice but to make moves, and to sit on the sidelines is not an option. There's too much at stake for us to say, hey, we're going to throw in the towel y nos movemos para un ladito. No, I think it's, we're always got to be ready to fight, and we know that this moment is, we're going to use this moment to help us build for what's next. So ready contigo, ready.
My temperature check is, está cabrón. The feeling is like, you know, when if you bite your nails and you're little and your parent guardian's like, te voy a poner chile para que ya no te muerda las uñas. That's how I feel. Like, I can't stop mordiéndome las uñas. So, yeah, that. And I think today, like, hicimos recorrido, right? You know, we did a bit of a, like, let's remember the past 20 years. Let's remember and let's hold and let's learn. And I think que no hicimos el recorrido completo, so I'm like, also I think that a part of the temperature check is like continuing to learn and continuing to revisit. And this is not the only episode where we'll touch on all of this stuff, porque, you know, buckle in, no te muerdas tanto las uñas porque falta más. What about you, Tania?
Ay, y si a mí me gusta el chile, que sí. No, pues, I think también lista, it's definitely interesting to sort of think about como que all of the phases, ¿no? Of stuff that we've been able to do. Y sí siento that, like, I am excited for the next unexpected movement that comes out of, like, immigrant rights. Porque siento que, in some ways, the coming out of the shadows, like, los que estaban bien metidos en el movimiento y como que, you know, in their non-profits, así como nosotros aquí estamos y en la policy y todo eso, they didn't even know que todo eso estaba pasando with like, young people and that, like, we were going to do this coming out stuff. So I'm like hoping that in some like room somewhere in the country hay un grupo de gentes pensando like how we're gonna disrupt the next like the story that we're telling about immigration y como que cambiar la cosa. And at first I'm gonna be like, ah, ¿qué están haciendo? They're being so ridiculous. Pero luego, you know, we're gonna realize that actually like that's the thing that's gonna change. So anyway, I'm excited for that. I'm ready for a hard year, pero como que, yeah, I'm excited for the unexpected.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you, Tania. And if you're out there listening to El Calentón, if you're not part of our political casita just yet, You can go on to mijente.net/join and become a member and help us build the future for our gente. Thank you all so much for joining and for listening.
Nos vemos.
Thank you. Gracias. Adios. Por sintonizar.